This is Buccaneers Total Access, with head coach Dirk Cutter.
Fire the cannons!
Brought to you by Frontier Communications. Fios keeps you in the game. Visit FrontierFlorida.com to join the team.
Winston looking left, goes a deep route toward Mike Evans. He hangs on! Touchdown, Tampa Bay! Mike Evans goes up and takes it away from two defenders. What a great throw by Winston!
Now your host, Bucs insider Casey Phillips, and head coach Dirk Cutter.
How's everybody doing, Tampa Bay? Happy Friday afternoon. Thank you so much for spending it here with us. And as always, this is all about taking your questions for head coach Dirk Cutter here. Let me tell you how to get those into us. Use that hashtag BucsRadio on Twitter. You can also submit them on the Bucs app under the feature section, or here are your phone numbers. Hillsborough County, 813-990-4620. Pinellas, 727-461-4620. And toll free, 888-546-4620. Coach, how are you doing this afternoon?
Hey, Casey, how are you doing?
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you, as always, for joining us. We'll dive right in here. Our first Twitter question wants to know, how much of the emotional side of the team do you feel like is your responsibility, and how much is on the players themselves?
Well, of course, I feel like all of it is on me, but that's probably not correct. I mean, it's probably somewhere in the middle. I mean, it's hard to say.
All right, our next one is from John, and he wants to know, obviously, Drew Brees is known as the quarterback for overcoming his height, and what have you seen from him that has allowed him to do that and be so successful despite being one of the shorter quarterbacks in the league?
Well, he's a very accurate passer, and he has great footwork. He knows where to go with the ball, and like I said, his accuracy is off the charts. One of the best back shoulder throwers the NFL's ever seen.
Yeah, and then our next one is from Tammy. She says, what have you seen has been the biggest change in the Saints' defense? Because for years, that was their big weakness, and it doesn't seem like that's the case this year.
Well, they're really playing well together. They're playing their roles. Their biggest disruptor is defensive end Cameron Jordan. They've rebuilt their secondary. They spent a first and a second round draft pick on a corner and a free safety, and then they've added some free agents. But more than anything, I think they're just playing well together and playing their roles well.
All right, our next one is from Jessica. She said, if I remember right, Cam Brate was very briefly a Saint recently. How thankful are you that you have him on your team and aren't having to face him this weekend?
Yeah, very thankful. We've talked about that multiple times on this show that, it was when I was offensive coordinator, we lost Cam for a short time period, and we're very excited to have him back and hopefully have him with the Bucs for a long time.
And Doug says, how much information can you get from players like Darrell Tapp that you just signed who come from an opponent you're facing?
It depends on the player. Sometimes they can be helpful. Sometimes not so much. Sort of depends on what position they play and, how much they were really into the overall scheme versus just what their individual position or their individual job does, but it varies from player to player.
Okay. And Mike says, I think I saw a stat ranking our offensive line in the top 10 in pressures allowed. Does that seem right to you, and how do you feel like they've performed?
No, that doesn't seem right to me. I think our offensive line has played fine. I mean, when you're we have to play better across the board. We have to play better. We have to coach better across the board. But when you look around the league, offensive lines in general, several offensive lines have been beat up with injuries. And, we've been able to play the same six guys every week. And we've stayed relatively healthy. And I think pass protection is one of the things that we're doing best right now.
Again, we're talking to head coach Dirk Koetter. You can continue to send in your questions on Twitter. Use that hashtag Bucks Radio or on the Bucks app under the feature section or give us a call. All right, our next one comes from Ryan, and he says, it looks like there are some new threats in the Saints offense, and it's not just about Drew Brees throwing deep anymore. How does that complicate preparing for them?
Yeah, it definitely does, because they have leaned a lot more on their running game. You know, the newcomer, the main newcomer on offense is Alvin Kamara, their third-round draft pick from Tennessee. They use him, New Orleans is using him similar to the way Carolina is using McCaffrey, meaning, you know, they hand it to him and throw it to him equally as much. But, you know, they've gotten the ball to those two running backs, Ingram and Kamara, a lot more. You know, they've still got a future Hall of Famer at quarterback. They've still got, you know, talented, dangerous receivers, but they're just balancing it out more. And any time a team is balanced, that's the hardest thing in the world to defend. Any defensive coach will tell you that.
Okay. We had another Twitter question say, would you ever agree to do Hard Knocks again?
Well, you know, again, we got to remember, we didn't, you don't volunteer for Hard Knocks. You can volunteer for it, but I don't know that that happens too often. You know, there's a set of criteria, and each year so many teams are eligible to do Hard Knocks. I think it was like 8 teams eligible this year, and, you know, they picked us. So I've said many times, I'm on record, I like the show Hard Knocks a lot. I would prefer that I personally wasn't on it. I think the players enjoyed some parts of it, and the crew that does Hard Knocks, that produces it, that films it, that shoots it, they are out of sight as far as pros and doing their jobs in a professional manner. But I think it's a little bit of a hindrance to have them there with you all the time and worry about every little single thing is on camera, but you know, it's just part of it. It's just part of it, and I don't think it has anything to do with, you know, where we're at right now, record-wise.
Lewis wanted to know, you've had to face a lot of veteran QBs already this season. Where would you rank Brees among those, and also among just the league's top quarterbacks?
Yeah, he's way up there. He's way up there, that's for sure. I mean, there's no question he's going to be in the Hall of Fame, and you know, you look at his all-time numbers. You know, just the quarterbacks in our division with Drew Brees, Matt Ryan, Cam Newton, you've got the last two MVPs and MVPs of the entire league, plus Drew Brees, who's won a Super Bowl and has stats that are up there with the all-time greats. So, yeah, he's right up there.
Paul wanted to know, is the Superdome the loudest place that you'll have to play all season? And if so, how do you prepare the offense for all the noise?
Yeah, the Superdome is extremely loud. Any dome stadium, you know, is very loud. Atlanta will be loud. When we played in Dallas last year, that was loud. Arizona can get loud. You know, the noise doesn't have anywhere to go, so there's kind of an echo in there, and we always practice with loud crowd noise when we're playing on the road. Today actually was the first time on that we've ever practiced in our new indoor facility and really cranked up the sound when the offense had the ball, because you know it's easy enough to make it loud, but to get that kind of that echo effect. You know, we did that today. We also practice using what we call a whisper cadence, where Jameis, when he's going through his cadence, he whispers. So really only probably the guards and the center are probably the only ones that can hear him. And we have to pass the calls out. We have to work on our hand signals. But, you know, anytime you play on the road in the NFL, you have those issues.
Interesting. Aaron said, it seems like our first offensive drive doesn't end in a touchdown very often, even in games when we score 30-plus points. What is different about that drive as compared to others later in the game?
Well, there really shouldn't be anything different other than, you know, the 11 guys that are on the field, you don't know where they're at, you know, their nerves, maybe it takes them, or a couple of them, maybe it takes them some time to settle in, but there really shouldn't be any. I mean, I've been on teams in the past that, you know, have a very high scoring percentage on first drives, and, you know, we just haven't been off to very good starts, and that's something that we definitely need to do better.
Jackie wanted to know, what is your favorite leftover Halloween candy, and what will still be sitting there even if you never had to touch any of it?
Oh, boy. Well, my kids are all grown and gone, and so I was working on Halloween, so we didn't get much Halloween, and I've been trying to be good, and I've been trying to stay away from the candy lately, but M&Ms would probably be up there for me, and as far as what's left over, I probably need to get it all out of the house, or there's probably nothing left over.
Nice. All right, we still have tons more here on Buccaneers Total Access with head coach Dirk Koetter, brought to you by Frontier Communications. Don't go anywhere. This is Buccaneers Radio.
Buccaneers Total Access, brought to you by Frontier Communications, now continues with head coach Dirk Koetter and Bucs insider Casey Phillips on Tampa Bay Sports Radio, 620 WDAE and 95.3 FM, home of the best Bucs coverage.
Welcome back in Tampa Bay. Thanks for spending your Friday afternoon with us. Again, we're taking all of your questions here for head coach Dirk Koetter. You can continue to send those in. Use that hashtag BucsRadio on Twitter. You can also submit them on the Bucs app under the feature section, and I'll hit you with those phone numbers one more time. Hillsborough County, 813-990-4620. Pinellas, 727-461-4620. And toll-free, 888-546-4620. And we actually have our first caller on the line right now. We got Howie from Tampa, who has a question about the secondary. Go ahead, Howie.
Hey, Coach Koetter. I was curious. Now, last week I noticed it was better, but in previous weeks it seems as if our defense was playing kind of soft. It would be a third three, third and four, and they're 7-8 yards off the receiver on the end. Is there going to be adjustments on that, or is there a reason, something that causes that?
No, we definitely need to be. One of the things Coach Smith and the defensive coaches have been preaching is awareness of the sticks on third down, awareness of where the chains are, and knowing what we have to defend. That's one of the things we've been trying to work on. And you know, as you know, a lot of these same guys, we were the number one team in the league on third down last year, but we just haven't been able to quite hit our stride yet this year.
All right, our next question is from Jack, and he wants to know, was it the doctor's call letting Jameis practice this week, or was it yours?
Yeah, anything having to do with if players practice or don't practice, those are all decisions that come from our medical staff, you know, our doctors, our trainers, and in some instances from the players. The players who know their bodies the best. I mean, in the NFL, extremely rarely would a coach be getting involved in that, just because, you know, the extensive medical personnel that we have that work with us and every team. So, those are almost always, in Jameis's case, this was a medical decision.
And then the second part of his question was, did you see a difference in his accuracy and timing that could translate to the game since he got a full week of practice in?
Well, of course, because you're comparing it to not practicing. So you know, if he doesn't practice on Wednesday or Thursday and only practices one day a week compared to practicing Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, definitely notice a big difference, and hopefully that will carry over.
Yeah, in a related fashion, Bobby wanted to know, Jameis didn't practice 2 weeks but had very opposite performances on those Sundays. So how much correlation do you see between practice and games for players individually and as a team overall?
Well, that's what makes it a difficult call. I mean, that's difficult to say. I've been asked that question a lot. And, you know, Jameis the week of the Buffalo game, didn't practice on Wednesday or Thursday, went out and had a very good game. And then last week, same thing, did not have his best game against Carolina. You know, on the teams that I've been on in the NFL, there's plenty of teams that will rest a veteran player. Certain veteran players either don't practice on Wednesday, or maybe don't practice on Thursday, or maybe practice just some of the reps. Part of that is based on experience and injuries, of course. Rarely does it happen with the quarterback. Usually, the starting quarterbacks that I've been around, they like to take every single rep in practice, and it's hard to get them to give those up. But I think we're on the backside of that. In the NFL, of course, you never know. Injuries could strike at any time. So when I say I hope we're on the backside of that, I mean, I hope obviously we don't ever have any injuries, but it's part of the game, and we just have to deal with it when it does come.
Yeah, and speaking of injuries, David wanted to know, now that we know Noah Spence is out the rest of the season, who do you see as needing to step up for him, or is it a group thing entirely?
Yeah, I think it's a group thing entirely. It's unfortunate. I talked to Noah. He had surgery earlier this week out in Colorado. The surgery went well. He seems to be in very good spirits, and he'll be back. He'll be back in the building sometime next week. But, I think that's going to have to be a collective effort.
And along those same lines, Jake wanted to know, what has been the struggle with the pass rush and what makes it hard to generate and not an easy fix?
Well, some of it is the scheme of the opponents and the quarterbacks that you're playing. You know, like, Drew Brees this week is really getting the ball out of his hands fast. Some of it depends on, do we want to just rush with four? Anytime you try to rush more than four, you're going to give up something on the coverage end. Some of it could just be, I'm generalizing here. It could be based on the offensive lines that you're playing against. I mean, there's a lot of factors that go into that. And then sometimes, players, they only get so many chances per game to just win their one-on-one battles. And maybe they, in Gerald's case, he gets a double teamed a fair amount, but maybe a guy wins his one-on-one, and just as he's getting to the quarterback, the guy gets the ball out. There's a lot of different variables there.
Yeah, speaking of Gerald, Jamie wanted to know, what do you say to the occasional critics of Gerald who don't think that he produces as much up the middle as some other people think?
Well, what I would say to those people is I think probably of the other 31 teams in the league, probably at least 29 of those teams would love to have Gerald McCoy on their team because, again, as someone who's gone against Gerald, he can be such a disruptor in the middle of the defense if he's not double-teamed. I think people inside the NFL recognize that. That's why Gerald's been to 5 straight Pro Bowls.
Yeah, and then Phil said, during training camp, it seemed like all we heard about was how amazing Chris Godwin looked. Why has that not translated to more targets or catches for him?
Well, mostly because you've got Mike Evans, DeSean Jackson, O.J. Howard, Cameron Brate, and Adam Humphries. I mean, Chris is doing fine. He's going to be a real good pro. He's doing a good job on special teams. He's just not getting very many targets right now, mainly because, if you're completing 20 to 25 passes a game, there's just only so many balls to go around.
Yeah, and Steve said, we know what yours and Jason Light's relationship is like during more of the draft times, but how much do you interact during the season, and what's your roles of working together then?
Yeah, we have a great relationship, and, we talk every day, either in Jason's office or in my office. Jason's out at practice, watching practice probably 95% of the time. It would be rare that he's not at practice. Usually sometime late morning, we get together in between meetings and talk about, what's coming up that day, or maybe his impressions of after he watched the practice tape from the day before. We just keep each other up to date on everything that's happening within the team. I keep him up to date on things that are happening from my end. He does the same on his end. And, you know, hardly a day goes by that we don't spend time multiple times together throughout the day.
Jim wants to know, what do you want your players to say about you as a head coach?
Yeah, that's something that I would never say. I would never say that publicly, because that's something that only your players can say. And, you know, I think anyone who is a head coach, they have to have their own style. They can't be like anybody else. They can't try to emulate, you know, their mentors or anything like that. I think if anything phony would come through to the players right off the bat. You know, I just think that, you would love the players to feel like you're tough but fair, and that any decisions that are made in the best interest of the team. But again, not, you know, getting 53 guys to think the same thing is never going to be perfect. 53 people in any profession.
That's very true. All right, Kyle says, at what point during the season would you potentially consider dialing back the playbook for Jameis, or is it just about execution and he has the playbook down?
The latter. I mean, yeah, Jameis definitely has the playbook down. I mean, Jameis is a huge studier of the game plan, and that is, as far as Jameis knowing the game plan and knowing the playbook, that is not an issue at all.
Richard wants to know, how has technology changed the way that you have coached?
Well, it probably multiple ways, and you know, so you're catching me a little bit off guard, but we use technology every day. I mean, the ease at which we can look at tape, look at the video, and how we can, and the way it can be cut up into any way you can possibly imagine, any sequence you want to see the plays in, by personnel, by down and distance, by gain, by ball carrier, by defense, by front, by coverage, by blitz. And, you know, not only can you do it in your office or in your meeting room, but heck, I can watch film at home on my iPad. I mean, it's just amazing what they can do. And that's just such a huge time saver, because as a coach, you never feel, especially as you get later in the season here with more games played, you never feel like you've watched enough tape. But you know, the way we're able to cut it up, you know, that part of technology, and then, you know, the way you can integrate tape into your PowerPoints as teaching tools, you know, there's just a lot of cool stuff that you can do, mixing video with PowerPoint, voiceover. And then the whole analytics. I mean, what statistics can tell you, what the analytics can tell you, somewhat how it, you know, sometimes can help you predict some tendencies. But yeah, we could probably spend multiple shows just talking about that if I had time to prepare for it.
Yeah. Well, go, you can use some of that technology to go prepare for it for next time. You can take some notes for us here. All right, Justin says, we just saw the injury report come out fairly recently today. How did the removing of the probable category affect the way you prep for another team?
I'm not really following that one.
So when there was the out and then questionable and probable, of how much you can know about another team's injury situation, when now all you really have is either out or questionable, does it tell you less about another team?
Yeah, you know, the thing with those tags in the NFL, unless a guy, you know, as you're looking at the daily, you know, what is a player limited or did not participate, in the NFL, usually, unless a player doesn't participate all week, he's probably going to play. Because, you know, every team only has 53 guys on their active roster. 46 are going to be up on game day. So anybody that's a limited participant in practice is almost always going to play. So unless we're seeing during the week, did not participate, did not participate, did not participate, we're counting on those guys to play.
Okay. Robbie wants to know, why is it so hard to get big punt or kick returns?
Well, because punters and kickers are are very good. That's a place where analytics have changed the game, because all these special teams coaches know that if you punt the ball 40 yards, the ideal hang time is X. If you punt it 45 yards, the ideal hang time is Y, and 50 yards. So really, if both teams are doing their job, the long returns usually come down to either a missed assignment by the cover team or some kind of a superhuman effort by the returner. I was fortunate enough to be able to be on a team with Devin Hester for a couple years in Atlanta, and, you know, arguably the greatest return man of all time in the NFL. And a great return man certainly makes a difference, but they're few and far between.
That's very true. All right, we have our next caller lined up here. James in Tampa has a question about Jameis. Go ahead, James.
Hey, Coach. I want to preface this by saying I love Jameis. I think he's the guy. I think he's the guy that's going to lead us into the playoffs and beyond. I really feel that way. I've seen every ball the kid's thrown outside of practice as a Florida State fan and a Buck fan. I just wanted to ask you, Jameis had another Jameis-like play where he's trying to make something happen in the arms of the defender who happens to be a Hall of Famer. And it's similar to a similar play that got a lot of airtime on Hard Knocks with in Jacksonville game, Coach, in preseason. I know that Jameis is a smart guy. You don't get an academic scholarship to Stanford without being smart. However, how have you seen anything that indicate to you that is something that, as the years go by, he will be able to fix? Because, you know, maybe something in practice or maybe an indication, just something he says that you see it's thinking into him, that play hurts us. Even if the ball is completed to Chuck Sims there, that's not a win. So I love the kid. I think he's doing great. I think you're doing great with him, but I'll hang up and listen, Coach.
Yeah, well, you nailed it right on the head. And Jameis is such an extreme competitor. You know, probably one of Jameis's few weaknesses is he just refuses at times to give up on a play. And, you know, there's bad plays or bad play calls or the wrong defense, or maybe the defense just does a good job, or maybe somebody on offense misses an assignment. And, you know, Jameis's whole life growing up, high school, going into college, he's made so many fantastic plays out of nothing, out of bad plays, that, you know, he just sometimes has a hard time giving up on plays. Do I think he's making progress in that area? Yes, definitely. Is that progress perfect? No. And is it always, you know, as fast as we might like in that area? No. But, you know, there's so many other positive qualities. And as you mentioned in the call, you know, Jameis is an extremely, extremely intelligent, smart guy. He definitely realizes that when those plays turn out negative, they hurt the team. So I think that's just something that experience will continue to grow on Jameis, and he'll get better and better with time.
Yeah, on a related note to that, we had a Twitter question from Daryl who said, I love how much passion Jameis has, but do you worry he gets a little too hyped up, especially doing things like giving all the pregame speeches, and maybe we should try to get him to calm down a little bit before the game?
Yeah, you know, that's a theory that I've heard before, and, you know, you can't – we talk about passion versus emotion, and passion – for what you're doing is a really good thing. Too much emotion can sometimes be irrational. And sometimes, you know, we talked to Jameis about that multiple times. When Jameis is talking to guys, you know, when he's talking to guys in the pregame speech or whatever, that's passion. That's passion, in my opinion, over emotion. And is it possible that he's too hyped up? Yeah, it's possible, but how do you put a measurement on that? I don't know how you put a measurement on that. And the passion that he's had has worked pretty well for him, you know, throughout his life. I mean, you know, coming into the NFL, he'd lost one game. So, you know, that's part of the reason that Jameis was drafted where he's drafted. That's one of the things that makes him great. And, you know, that's probably something that you're really not trying to coach out of him.
Yeah, that's a great point. All right, we are at around the halfway point here on Buccaneers Total Access with head coach Dirk Koetter. Still plenty of time for you to get all your questions in for him. Use that hashtag BucksRadio on Twitter. You can also submit them in the Bucks app under the feature section or give us a call. I'll give you those numbers one last time. Hillsboro, 813-990-4620. Pinellas, 727-461-4620. And toll-free, 888-546-4620. 4620. Buccaneers Total Access with head coach Dirk Koetter, brought to you by Frontier Communications. This is Buccaneers Radio.
You're listening to Buccaneers Total Access, brought to you by Frontier Communications with head coach Dirk Koetter and Bucs insider Casey Phillips on Tampa Bay Sports Radio, 620 WDAE and 95.3 FM, home of the best Bucs coverage.
Welcome back in Tampa Bay. Thanks again for spending your Friday afternoon with us. We are still taking your questions here for head coach Dirk Koetter. You can submit them on Twitter with the hashtag BucksRadio, also in the feature section of the Bucks app, or you can give us a call. And we actually have a caller on the line right now. Ward from Brandon actually has a question about sports movies. Go ahead, Ward.
Hey, guys. Happy Friday. Thanks for taking the call. Coach, no X's and O's for you this week. Just a simple question. What's maybe one or two of your favorite sports movies? And also, you remember when Bobby Boucher showed up at halftime and the Mud Dogs won the Boivin Bowl?
Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah, I like a lot of sports movies, but just, again, without thinking about it for more than 10 seconds, I'm going to say that all the Rocky movies. I'm a big Rocky Balboa fan.
That's pretty great. I like that one. Rocky's a good one. When we went to Philly, were you tempted to do the stair run?
With two hip replacements, I think my stair running days are over.
Hey, you know, Rocky came back. Come on, coach. You can do it. I have faith. All right. Our next question is from Tellus, who says, what are some of the qualities that make Jameis a special quarterback? And they gave some suggestions of what they think, things like arm talent, confidence to push the ball downfield, ability to throw with anticipation, work ethic, et cetera. So it sounds like they're obviously a pretty big Jameis fan.
Yeah, well, they don't need me for that question. They hit them all right on the head.
Those would have been all your answers right there, too. All right, so Brandon wants to know, have there been any talks of DeSean Jackson taking punt returns to get more touches?
No, not at this time. I mean, I think if it would have to be an emergency situation. I mean, DeSean's definitely been a guy that can take it to the house. But that's not something that DeSean is looking to do on a week-to-week basis. You know, that's playing, being a punt returner back there is, you're going to take some hits that at this point in his career, you know, he's not going to, we're not going to ask him to go into that scenario. But, you know, we have talked to DeSean about in an emergency situation, either a punt or a kickoff to possibly go back there. And he said he'd be happy to do that.
You know, I had seen a question come by earlier from Eric who said, how many people would have to get hurt before you'd let Levante David finally field the punt after practicing so many times on the jugs machine?
52.
That's pretty great.
No, I'm just kidding. Levante, you know, when you're practicing, when you're at practice and during different phases of practice, during certain phases, some of your starting players aren't always involved in the special teams. And yeah, I think it's awesome that Levante goes back there and catches punts off the jugs and spends time with the returners. You know, that's something on Fridays, our offensive linemen, Donovan Smith and Evan Smith, love to go back there and catch punts off the jugs. Yeah, that's one of the things that breaks up the monotony of practice, for the players. And, I chuckle when there's people that take it seriously, like Levante would really be back there returning punts. But I will say this, in the 3 years that I've been on the same team with Levante, he's improved a lot.
Wow, look at that. So he's actually getting pretty good about that. I do have to hear how Donovan and those big guys do. How are they back there trying it?
Well, it's not ready for prime time.
I won't tell them that. Don't worry. We'll let them think that they still got a shot back there. All right. Our next one is from Nate, and he says, if there was a dreadful situation where Anger and Murray both got hurt in a game, we're all knocking on wood, by the way, who would kick and who would punt?
Ooh, boy. man, where's Coach Nate Katzer when I need him? we're fortunate. We have multiple guys on our team that can long snap. We've used Darius Glanton before in a game. Luke Stalker is also a guy that can long snap. And Alan Cross, when he was active, he's on our practice squad now, is another guy that can long snap. So I've never been on a team that had this much depth at long snapper. But as far as kicking, I'm going to go out on a limb, and we do have someone. Let's revisit that one next week.
Next week, all right.
I don't want to say the wrong thing, because I know we have someone, but I can't think off the top of my head. That's something that we have not practiced this year. We were early in the season. We made a joke out of it one day that we were going to go with an emergency kicker, and we had Brent Grimes come out for a field goal, and that was a tremendous failure. That was guy.
Oh, I love that. That's pretty great. Honestly, I was kind of hoping you were going to say Levante, just because I was hoping all of a sudden he's our backup specialist at everything here. All right, our next one is from Joe, and he says, I've heard you talk about your dad as being someone you look up to. Have you spoken to him these past few weeks about how unpredictable football can be?
Oh, well, it's funny that you say that, because I'm sitting at my desk at my house, and I'm looking at some pictures of my dad right now that I have on my desk. And yeah, my dad is definitely my idol. And the reason I am a coach in the first place, which he advised me not to be, but, I haven't talked to my dad in the last couple of weeks, just after the game. But, you know, I check in with my folks, before and after every game, but, you know, it's just when you're on a losing streak like we are, boy, my dad's been there. I mean, he's been on both sides of the coin. So he knows how I'm feeling. And he also knows that I don't necessarily want to have to talk about it. You know, it's just hard to, you know, once you lose a game once, you don't want to have to go back over it and keep talking about it. But I owe a ton to both my parents. You know, I owe a ton to both of them, and they're my heroes, and I know they're following the Bucks back in Pocatello.
Yeah, I bet they are. All right, on sort of a related note, Robert wanted to know, other than your dad, what other coaches have you tried to mold your style after?
Well, not mold style, but I've learned from every coach I've ever worked with, and I've visited a lot of coaches. You know, when I was a younger coach, I always was trying to go to NFL camps when I was a college coach and learn from NFL coaches. Been influenced by every coach I've ever worked with, assistant coaches as well. But, you know, the head coaches that I worked with, the late Vic Rowan back at San Francisco State, who, you know, also had mentored Mike Holmgren and Andy Reid, Bob Stull, who's just recently going to retire here any day now at UTEP as the athletic director. Bob was the offensive coordinator under Don James at Washington when he had Warren Moon, and I think they played in 3 Rose Bowls. Dan Henning at Boston College, who was a Super Bowl winner with the Redskins and a former head coach of the Chargers and the Falcons. Mike Bellotti, former head coach at Oregon. All guys, and I'm sure I'm leaving out more, but Jack Del Rio as a head coach, Mike Smith as a head coach, Lovie Smith as a head coach, all guys that I have utmost respect for and learn from all those guys.
All right, our next question was, if you could coach another sport, what would it be?
Another sport, oh boy. Well, I was a basketball coach. You know, I was a high school basketball coach for a long time, and I really loved that. I started when I was still playing in college at my old high school, and when I was a high school football coach, I was also an assistant basketball coach. I loved that. But right now, I don't know enough about it to be a coach, but the sport I'm trying to learn more about is fishing. I'd like to be a fishing coach. I actually need a fishing coach And I just had about an hour ago, I had a nice snook hooked off my dock. And I needed the coach because when I was trying to get it from the dock, from the water to the dock, I lost it. And it's probably the biggest one I've ever caught since I lived in Tampa. But I don't, since I lost it, I don't have a picture to prove it.
You know, amazingly, I'm picturing that this, you're going to say that the snook was, you know, this big with your hands really out wide, and maybe it wasn't quite that big. Are you one of those fishermen that tells the tale?
No, I'm not. And I've seen some of the snook that are caught around here, and I'm just saying it was a personal record for me. And boy, those things can fight. It was a lot of fun. I was out back behind my house and by myself, and I had it on, and all I was thinking about was getting a picture of it so I could show it to my kids, and it got me at the end.
Gotcha.
It hit that hook.
Well, I heard that Dave Moore is actually a pretty great fisherman, so maybe you can pick his brain on the road trip this weekend and get some reverse coaching here. The former player telling the coach a thing or two about fishing, so maybe that's your next stop.
That'd be good.
All right, our next one is from Cade, and he says, if you could have met any head coach ever, who would it have been?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've read a lot about Vince Lombardi. That would have been awesome. George Halas of the Bears, that would have been awesome. I actually did meet Bill Walsh and talked to Bill Walsh on multiple occasions. That was, of course, fantastic. Yeah, those would be the ones that I would just say off the top of my head.
That's great. I love that. All right. John wants to know, when did you know Jameis was going to be an upper-tier quarterback? Because I remember you saying that you were not the first one sold on him when we were drafting him, and I know that he has changed your mind since. So when was that moment for you?
Well, after working with him, I mean, after working with Jameis that first spring, you know, just so impressed. And, you know, when I first came here as the offensive coordinator, Lovie Smith and Jason Light, they had already put in work on, I think they already had a pretty good idea that, you know, that they wanted to draft Jameis. And when I got here, you know, it was before the draft, and you know, my only assignment in that was to do film study on Jameis and on Marcus Mariota, and really liked both of those guys, liked both players a lot. And then we got into the interview process. I've talked about this many times. You know, Jameis blew us away on his visit. I mean, both guys did a heck of a job, but Jameis blew us away with his football knowledge, his recall, his just understanding of football. And then, you know, when we drafted Jameis and we got him in that first year for OTAs, it was clear from the start. I mean, he very, very, very talented guy with a great football mind.
I love it. All right, we still have one more segment coming up here on Buccaneers Total Access with head coach Dirk Koetter. Plenty of time for you to still get those questions in. Use that hashtag BucksRadio on Twitter or the feature section of the Bucks app, or give us a call. Buccaneers Total Access with head coach Dirk Koetter is brought to you by Frontier Communications. This is Buccaneers Radio.
Buccaneers Total Access with head coach Dirk Koetter now continues. Brought to you by Frontier Communications on 620 WDAE and 95.3 FM, home of the best Bucs coverage.
Welcome back in Tampa Bay. Hope you're having a great start to your weekend this Friday afternoon. We are still here with head coach Dirk Koetter, and this is it, the final segment, your last chance to get those questions for him in. Use that hashtag BucksRadio on Twitter or the feature section of the Bucks app, or give us a call. All right, Keith wants to know, we've heard about the players taking their turn on the ping pong table in the locker room. Have you gone down there and tried it? And if so, are you any good?
I have not, because those guys are so stingy. They it's hard to get in. It's hard to get in. But I used to be a player. When I coached at Oregon back in the day, Chris Peterson and myself, we had some wicked battles. But everybody talks a good game. I want to get a piece of Mike Evans, but
that's pretty great. I like that. All right, we got our next caller lined up here. It's Patrick from Tampa. Has a question about the hurry up offense. Go ahead, Patrick.
Hey, Coach. Hey, I love the way that Winston plays when he's just trying to push it in the hurry-up offense. My question is, have you thought about trying to run a little bit of hurry up different times in the game? As opposed to, like, I know it's always in the end of the game, it's always a hurry up type of mode, but mixing in a little more frequently in the first quarter, second quarter, he just seems more at home when he's got that little bit of movement, not thinking about the ball, not thinking about the plays as much.
Yeah, I agree. Jameis does do a good job in the no huddle. And, you know, we went the whole first half at Buffalo in the no huddle. And we started the game last week against Carolina in the no huddle. Probably went two or three series before we got out. So, you know, at Buffalo, we went right down those first two drives, weren't able to punch it in, got field goals. But, yeah, we have a no huddle package. It's not quite as fast as your two-minute offense, but it's still a no-huddle and some tempo plays mixed in there. And we do try to incorporate that most weeks.
All right, we got our next caller lined up as well. Muhammad from Wesley Chapel has a question about dealing with a losing streak. Go ahead, Muhammad. Muhammad, do we got you? Guess we lost. I guess we lost him. All right. Our next question here is from Sean, and he wants to know, when a game like this one feels like a must win, do you use that to fuel the team, or do you downplay it and tell them it's just one game?
You can't, you know, you can't fool these guys. I mean, you can't, they know what it is, and every game's a must game, you know, whether you're 5-2 or 2-5, every game in the NFL is a must game. And, you know, we always try to take it one game at a time. So, of course, it's a must win. And at the same time, you do have to take it one at a time. I mean, so both of those are really true.
All right. Jared wants to know, do you feel more confident in your young members of the secondary after last week's game? And does that give you some reassurance if Grimes is not able to go?
Yeah, definitely. Really encouraged by the steps that Ryan Smith took. You know, he said he couldn't wait for his next chance after the Minnesota game, and he definitely upped his game. And then also proud of Vernon Hargraves coming back like he did after, you know, after having his role reduced in the Buffalo game from a full-time starter outside to a starter at nickel on the inside, and he handled himself like a pro. And then we got Robert McClain cleared out of the concussion protocol this week. So we were pretty thin. You know, we were pretty thin last week at corner. We're still not going to have Brent Grimes with us this week. He's getting better. But, yeah, I am more confident, and I think the guys are more confident in themselves.
All right, I think we had Muhammad call back. Muhammad, are you there now?
Yes. Sorry about that. I put myself on mute. I apologize.
Oh, you're good. Go ahead.
Hi, Coach. Coach, I had a question real quick about one of the things you alluded to last year was the culture of losing. You attributed what was going on with the Bucs to that. And when you said that, I agreed with you 100%, because for years I've been saying that's the reason. I think there has been a lack of commitment to excellence and efficiency by this organization prior to you coming here. And I think that's still kind of, I think last year especially, still that was happening. That culture of losing was created because of that, and you alluded to that. So my question to you, Coach, is, do you think that culture is still happening, and that's the reason that the Bucs are in this situation? Because I see it, but I want to see if you can talk about this, if you agree with me on that. Thank you again.
Yeah. Well, that's an excellent observation by Muhammad, and I thought that we kicked it last year. You know, I thought we were over that, and we had an excellent off season. We've got really good leadership from our players. So here we are on this losing streak, and you know, I don't want to believe it's culture. I really don't. And I'm around these guys every day. But at the same time, we have lost four in a row. I mean, you can't hide from that. That has happened. And, you know, I want to believe that's not what the reason is, because we've worked very hard to overcome that. But until you overcome it consistently, and I'm part of that. So I can't, you know, I'm not trying to point the finger at anybody else. I'm a part of that. All the coaches are, and the players are as well. So, yeah, I hope that's not what it is. But I don't have a steadfast answer as to what it is right now. Other than the one thing that definitely shows up on tape is we're just not playing consistent enough. Across the board, we're not playing complementary football. And when we get back to playing complementary football and playing good, solid football in all three phases, I think the wins will come back.
All right. Well, we have complete confidence it's going to get turned around this weekend in New Orleans. Coach, thanks for being with us. Thanks to all of you in Tampa for joining us this Friday afternoon. Buccaneers Total Access with head coach Dirk Cutter is brought to you by Frontier Communications. This is Buccaneers Radio.